You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
3 weeks ago, thousands of scientists participated in rallies across Canada, voicing their concerns about what they see as threats to science in the public interest. This is the second time scientists have spoken out publicly. In July 2012, events marking the death of evidence took place in many Canadian cities. Katie Gibbs is Executive Director of Evidence for Democracy, a new group advocating for evidence-based decision-making in government. Katie Gibbs recently completed a PhD in biology from the University of Ottawa, and she joins me on the line this morning from Ottawa. Hello, Katie.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Why did you decide to form the group Evidence for Democracy?
Well, partly, you know, we organized that first rally because we were really concerned about the state of science in Canada. And the response to the rally was just, you know, completely overwhelming and far beyond what we had anticipated. And so we had a bunch of people coming up to us afterwards saying, you know, that was amazing. What's next? And so, you know, from there we kind of realized that these issues were an ongoing problem and there really wasn't anybody else focused on science advocacy and advocating for evidence-based decision-making. So, you know, there really was just sort of a need for a group that was focusing on these issues.
Now, there are a number of instances of Canadian scientists not being allowed to speak about their research, being muzzled in effect. Which areas are particularly targeted by the federal government?
So, you know, we've seen sort of two things. One, there really has been, you know, kind of a muzzling across the board. The sort of mentality in the federal government has really shifted to one where, you know, nobody is allowed to speak out. But most of the, you know, really clear specific instances that we've seen have been around environmental issues, climate change, that sort of thing.
And how long has the muzzling actually been going on?
Well, it really started sort of late 2007 when there were some changes to the communication policies at Environment Canada, where they basically said that, you know, the department would speak with one voice, and so, you know, any communications with the media had to come through the communications department. And so scientists were told that they weren't allowed to answer media requests directly, that they had to forward everything on to the communications department.
Now, I understand that there was a recent example where a U.S. scientist on an Arctic science project spoke out about the rules that he was being asked to agree to. Tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there was an Arctic science project that was going to be a collaboration between U.S. and Canada. You know, it's very common for Canadian and U.S. scientists to collaborate on issues, you know, as well as, you know, scientists from many other countries. And the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, you know, presented this really strict confidentiality agreement that they wanted the U.S. scientists to sign. And, you know, he took one look at it and said, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, it said that he couldn't do any interviews, he couldn't blog about his research, he couldn't talk about his research. And, you know, he said that this was muzzling and that it went against academic freedom. And so he didn't sign it. And so I think that's a really great example of how the muzzling is, you know, actually affecting the science that we do in Canada. You know, we're losing the opportunity to have these really great collaborations because people, you know, scientists from other countries aren't going to be willing to sign these confidentiality agreements.
Now, Michael Halperin, who's with the U.S. organization Union for Concerned Scientists, says mm-hmm. that Canadian scientists are where U.S. scientists were a decade ago. What does he mean by that?
Well, so when George Bush was president in the U.S., he sort of implemented some similar policies there that, you know, really restricted how government scientists could communicate their research to the public. And actually a recent New York Times editorial also, you know, sort of made that comparison between Canada now and the U.S. under the Bush years, although they actually said that it's worse now in Canada than it ever was under Bush. So I think that's, you know, a good comparison for Canadians to really understand just how bad the situation is here.
And so have things changed in the United States since then?
They have, actually. So the group that Michael is with, the Union of Concerned Scientists, they've done a lot of work to get sort of open science policies implemented in the U.S. And so, you know, it's still not perfect, but, you know, scientists there are allowed to speak out. They're allowed to do interviews. You know, all that they're required to do is, when they're doing an interview, you know, they make it clear that they're not speaking on behalf of the government. And so, you know, they're freely available to do interviews and things like that.
Now, the government defends itself by saying that it's funding research. It's still funding research. What is the difference between the kind of applied research that the government is funding and basic science research?
Yeah, so, you know, there's two different issues. One, on the muzzling issue, you know, the government is really just sort of completely denying that it's happening, even though there's, you know, considerable amount of evidence that it is happening. But you're right, one of the other problems is that we've seen a complete shift away from funding any kind of basic or fundamental research. So this is often, you know, also called curiosity-driven research. So this is, you know, research that it's not being led down a specific path. There isn't a specific endpoint that we're trying to get. And, you know, I can understand that it might seem, you know, better to only fund, you know, specific projects where we know what we're trying to achieve. But, you know, if you look back at the history of science, you know, most of the discoveries, almost everything that we enjoy, things like cell phones, you know, MRI, Velcro, laser technology, you know, all of these things that are so influential in our lives, those all started as basic research, where scientists were just sort of given, you know, free rein to make discoveries, and that those discoveries have always gone on to become great things. But we've really cut almost all funding for that kind of science in Canada.
What kind of effect is the current government's attitude towards science having on the practice of science in Canada in general?
Well, I mean, it's pretty stark. I mean, you know, if you look at government science, it's been, you know, really cut. So the amount of science that we do is reduced. And I think a lot of it is just sort of the feeling towards science. You know, I'm, as a young scientist, you know, talking with, you know, my other colleagues who are, you know, sort of the next generation of scientists, they feel very discouraged. You know, when they went into science, they felt like it was, you know, sort of a prestigious field, whereas now they feel they don't feel that their government sees science that way. You know, and so I think that it, you know, I hope that it doesn't reduce the number of people who want to go into science, but I'm concerned that it will.
Now, one of the initiatives that your group is taking is to assemble a network of experts to report on the use of evidence in decision making. What exactly will they be doing?
Well, so, you know, part of it is that we don't really have these things well documented. You know, a lot of the cuts that we've seen to public science, we don't actually know where we've lost capacity. We know that there's been a reduction in budget cuts, but we don't actually know, you know, what research was being done that isn't being done any longer. So, you know, one of the first things that our group wants to do is actually try to monitor these things and start documenting them. So that we can actually, you know, so that when we say things like, you know, there's less evidence-based decision-making now than before, we want to be able to, you know, back that up with evidence, of course.
One of the things I really appreciate about your group is that it will actually make a statement like, evidence should be used in decision-making.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because it's such an important concept that is so often lost.
Yeah, and I think it's really, you know, fundamental to so many other issues. You know, we've talked a lot about the environmental issues, but also in so many of our, you know, social programs and social policies, it's really important there as well. You know, I often give the example of crime policy and the mandatory minimum sentencing that the government put into place, you know, even though all of the evidence in the field showed that, you know, wasn't going to reduce crime, that it's just very costly, and yet our government did it anyway. So I think that that's actually a really great example of, you know, where the evidence wasn't used in the policy decision.
How can people help with your campaign?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. They can go to our website, evidencefordemocracy.ca. We have a petition there where they can send a message to Stand Up for Science. We also have a Science Uncensored petition specifically about muzzling. People can sign up to be part of our network of experts. And, of course, as a new organization, we really do need funds. So if anybody supports what we're doing, we would like to invite them to donate as well.
Well, excellent. I was very happy to talk to you this morning, and congratulations on the new organization.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Katie Gibbs. She's Executive Director of Evidence for Democracy, a new group advocating for evidence-based decision-making in government.